Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We're going to learn about the Morris Animal Foundation and all they do for animals, which is really quite remarkable. And you know what? I've been hearing more reports of dogs being left out in the cold with no choice, no chance to come indoors. I will talk about that and rant and rave a little bit too. Oh, darn it. We lost Dr. Christy Hoffman several years ago to a nice warm climate in Buffalo, New York. She is now the Associate Professor, Animal Behavior, Ecology, and Conservation at Canisius College in Buffalo. Kind of welcome back to Chicago, Dr. Hoffman.
Thank you. I think maybe we don't quite have as much snow in Buffalo right now as you have in Chicago, but we're trying to catch up over here.
Good. You deserve it. I hope you do. So, I know that you were involved with the Animal Welfare League of Chicago when you were here, an organization called the Trio Animal Foundation and others. And I know you care a whole lot about shelter medicine. So I want to begin by asking you this question. Then we're going to talk about a fascinating study that you did about pets and the pandemic. But one thing that happened, and I talk to Anna DeVlantis on the radio all the time about this, and that is those pandemic puppies. At the very beginning of all of this, animal shelters, not only in Chicago, but all around the country, said, help! And they said that because they truly had no idea if their employees could even come into work the next week even, let alone volunteers. They saw that all crashing. Who's going to take care of the animals? And sure enough, people helped in a big way. Adoptions in many places in America, including Chicago, were never higher. I don't know if you know this, but Chicago Animal Care and Control, at one point, they say, we don't know because we don't keep absolute records going back like 50 years, but we believe there have never been fewer, at one point, fewer dogs and cats in our facility ever, ever, ever. Why do you think it is that so many people adopted? Was it just sort of an altruistic thing to do, responding to the shelter's cry for help? Or was it something more than that having to do with the human-animal bond?
That's a really great question. And, you know, during this time of COVID and especially earlier on in the pandemic when even more things were shut down and more restricted, our opportunities to engage with others were severely limited and certainly still are to various extents for people. So I think maybe people were motivated not just to help, but also to have that companionship and maybe felt that this was a great time. If we're all stuck at home, it's a great time to maybe work on potty training a puppy, maybe people were thinking, and putting the time into getting to know that new pet. So I think probably a lot of factors have contributed to this kind of unprecedented increase in adoptions that we've seen.
You know, I wonder, I think everything you say is right, but I also wonder if there was something inside of us, hardwired perhaps, saying, or not even consciously, all right, we want structure, we want something consistent, and also we want something unconditional that we know will be there. And for those who have ever had a pet before, or even for those who have heard about what pets can bring us, I just wonder if it was not a conscious decision in some cases, but emotionally people said, I'm going to do this. And without thinking about it, the reasons are, well, what I just described.
Right, right. I think that certainly could be how maybe some people have coped with all of the changes, maybe without even understanding completely why they did it, but felt compelled to go out and bring an animal home.
Speaking of which, was coping easier if you happen to have and live with a dog, a cat, maybe even a pet bird or guinea pig, I don't know. And you took a look at that during the pandemic, whether pets in your home are a benefit or not. What motivated you to do this study? The study, by the way, called The Experience of Teleworking with Dogs and Cats During COVID-19, published, by the way, in the Journal of Animals. So your study has now been published. Congratulations for that. But what motivated you to do it?
So I actually started thinking about this type of project before the pandemic hit. So I think some people wonder if I am the cause of the pandemic because I wanted more people to telework so I could survey them. But I definitely I'm not the cause of the pandemic, but I was thinking about it even before COVID struck, and then COVID happened, and more people moved to teleworking, meaning this was a study that I felt like I really had to start working on and getting the data and figuring out what was going on with people's experience of working at home and having pets alongside them. And then, you know, I've been forced to think about this more and more in my own life because I have two dogs and a parakeet and a husband who works from home and a daughter who's home way more often than she's not, even though normally she'd be in kindergarten full time this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been my research and a lot of this has been my life for the past year as well.
Well, you and millions of other people, of course.
Right.
I won't ask you if you play with your husband more often, but I will ask you if I didn't mean it that way. I will ask you, I'm in trouble now. I will ask you if you, or more importantly, the people you surveyed, played with their dogs more often.
Right. We did find that when people were working from home, they indicated they played with and pet their dogs more often than they did on days that they worked from the office. So we did see that. We didn't see that with cats. I'm not entirely sure why, but certainly people seem to think that they were engaging more with their dogs when they were working from home.
Well, I want to pursue the cat part of it. It kind of depresses me. Why do you think that is?
I'm a little bit at a loss for why that may be. I think maybe part of it is not all cats, but a lot of cats seem to be inclined to interact with us on their terms rather than our terms, whereas dogs are, you want to play with me? I'm here. I'm available. Let's do something. So that might be part of it. And I think, you know, when we think about the animals, dogs and cats may, if they could talk, report having very different experiences with this whole pandemic and their people being around so much. Some animals may really have enjoyed this. I have a dog where I think maybe he started the pandemic because he couldn't be happier with us home all the time. Whereas other animals maybe are wishing for life to go back to normal so they can have some peace and quiet.
Yeah, so we can now blame one of your dogs and you for starting the pandemic. You know, there's the cartoon that shows one dog in a corner hiding under a desk as the person grabs a leash and says, come on, let's go for a walk. That's the cartoon bubble. And the cartoon bubble over the dog that's hiding says, this is our eighth walk today, and it's only 9 a.m. So that's been true for a lot of people. But you know what? Getting outside, going outside, taking a walk with your dog is physically good, not only for the dog, but it's good for people as well. It's also good psychologically for socialization in many neighborhoods. If you come across other people and their dogs, I want to talk about that and more results of this study when we come back right here, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Talking with Dr. Christy Hoffman, Associate Professor, Animal Behavior, Ecology, and Conservation. Now in Buffalo, New York, she's left Chicago. And the name of the study we're talking about, the experience of teleworking with dogs and cats during COVID-19. And I was about to ask you about taking those dogs for walks. Did they do that more often? And talk about the benefits.
So when I compared people when working from home, people who had dogs and who didn't have dogs, those with dogs indicated that they were more likely to get physical activity and to go for walks than people without dogs. What was really interesting, though, is that those dog owners indicated they were just as likely to walk on days they went to work as they did on days they worked from home, which I think suggests that dog walking for dog people is either part of your routine or not part of your routine. And that's for those who are invested or who don't really have an alternative if they don't have a yard, then they're doing that no matter what.
I want to better understand this. I'm surprised or I am misunderstanding. So that cartoon bubble that I described way earlier was all wrong? I mean, people are not taking their dogs for more walks?
Not at all. I think the difference here is that in my survey, I didn't actually ask how much they were walking. It was just a, you know, do you walk your dog on these days or how likely are you? So this is kind of the fun of research is we get to the end and we're like, why didn't we ask that particular question?
Right.
Why didn't I talk to Steve before I did the study to get really more of a quantification of how much people are walking? But just from my own neighborhood and seeing people out who I've never seen and dogs out who I've never seen, you know, until this year, with the pandemic, it does seem people are getting out more than maybe they were when life was different.
Yeah, I think that's the consensus overall, which is good for people, and it's good for dogs. The socialization, if you happen to have a social dog, is a good thing for the dogs. I mean, the dogs don't have to keep social distance necessarily. And it's good for people, even if you do keep social distance and are wearing a mask, which is proper, but you still get to at least see other people. I think that's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great, especially this year when the opportunities to hang out with other people, go to other people's homes, or to meet up at restaurants have been so limited that being able to go out for a walk and having a dog with you who kind of helps break the ice with strangers and gives you a chance to sometimes even meet new people has been probably really important for people this year. I know from when I lived in Chicago and walked my dogs a gazillion times a day because I didn't have a yard, that's how I met my friends was, and people I still keep up with to this day are the friends I made because they had dogs and they were out in the Chicago winter with their dogs, and so was I.
Yeah, I totally get that, although at this very moment, our dog's idea of a walk is just going out, she pees, and then she looks at me like, please, I need to get back in the house. And I look back at her and I say, I do too. So I totally understand that because it's been so crazy here. Has there been, in the limited time we have left, any downside? Did people respond, oh, you know what, the dog barking while I'm doing these telephone calls, depending on what your job is, depends on the phone call, but as I'm doing these Zoom calls, that's annoying. Or the cat walking over the computer keyboard. Did you get any of that?
Yes, definitely. So it wasn't all puppies, kittens, and rainbows with the study. We did find some negatives where people were likely to report that their dogs and or their cats did create some distractions during the day. There definitely should be some follow-up research to study that a little bit more, and that could be really helpful for animal trainers to know who are working with clients who are working from home and identifying, you know, what some of these issues are, because there certainly could be some techniques that could help people and pets live a better quality of life when they're stuck together during the workday.
Well, and you know what? This is really all about the human-animal bond, so it's no surprise that the Human-Animal Bond Association co-sponsored your study, as did Zoetis, a company that cares greatly about the human-animal bond. Dr. Hoffman, good to talk to you again.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Tiffany Grunert is the president and CEO of the Morris Animal Foundation. And before we really get into it, Tiffany, I think if people don't know, frankly, you ought to know if you're an animal lover about the Morris Animal Foundation. What is this organization about?
Oh, thank you so much. I do hope that people begin to follow Morris Animal Foundation. We fund and conduct research to advance the health of animals. So for us, it's all about scientific discovery to help dogs, cats, and wildlife alike. And we've been around for 70 years. Many of the diagnostic tools and vaccines that we take for granted were based on some of the original research done by Morris Animal Foundation researchers.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So much of what we know, whether it be about that giraffe you see in a zoo, or if you are lucky enough to see a black-footed ferret, actually, an endangered species from the USA. If you're lucky enough to see one of those guys in the wild, over the years, Morris Animal Foundation has funded studies on them. And then look at your own dog or cat at home. Studies have been funded on them as well. And one of the studies has to do with golden retrievers, the first study of its kind ever, ever, ever.
That's right. The Golden Retriever Lifetime Study has been around since 2012. We're just now entering our ninth year. It's a longitudinal study with 3,000 dogs across the United States, and we're looking for correlations to cancer. So pet owners fill out a very large questionnaire, over 70 pages, as do veterinarians, and then we collect samples from the golden retrievers. We're looking at fur, blood, even dog poo, among other things. And we're storing those year over year so that we can really understand why this precious breed, this very popular, loving breed, has a higher propensity towards cancer.
Yes. So they do have exactly what you said, this higher propensity toward cancer. And, you know, in the past, it's been assumed that no matter what the breed is, or for dogs in general, because there's no Centers for Disease Control for our dogs and cats. So we assume based on anecdotal knowledge, and Morris Animal Foundation said, that's enough of that. We want to follow for a lifetime. And I think the golden retriever number one in your study, as I recall, was Betty White's golden retriever.
Yes, Betty White has been a spokesperson and supporter. She's emeritus on our board of trustees. Truly, she helped make the foundation what it is today. But she was very dedicated to this study, as is Betty Morris herself. Betty Morris is a longtime family member of the Morris family. The foundation began over 70 years ago with Dr. Mark Morris Sr., who really looked at correlations to disease and malnutrition. So we continue with the study to this day and are very fortunate to have that rich history.
You know, we all share this planet together. Wildlife does count, and in a variety of ways. I mentioned captive animals at zoos before. You fund studies for those guys, but also those other guys that might be in the wilds of Africa.
We do so much for wildlife, and it's such a critical time. Certainly, wildlife faces both habitat loss and disease. And so we're really looking for partners to focus on that disease aspect to help at least remove one of the layers. We've helped so many animals. One of the areas I'm most proud of is the Fund for Australia. Our Board of Trustees approved just last year around this time. It's crazy, right? That was just a year ago.
Yeah.
That Australia was really, their wildlife was threatened by the wildfires. Our role was really to take a look at how we could look at supporting those providing emergency care. How do they recognize triage symptoms so that really we're putting the most resources towards the animals that will survive? And so we put $1 million towards helping those animals. Then the second round just came through, and we continue to look at how we can learn from this experience. What were some of the things that were done in the communities that helped wildlife or not? That's something that we don't know. Does putting out water during a fire help an animal or not? Is that more detrimental? So that's one of the studies that we're working on now.
Oh, interesting. You know, and, you know, we all saw the videos of the koalas, you know, walking down a road maybe, and they may have been suffering from smoke inhalation or half burnt. And, you know, it's just absolutely heartbreaking. And I believe Morris Animal Foundation was one of the first, because you truly are an international organization, one of the first international organizations to say, we're going to do something about this. We're going to make a difference to hopefully better understand all of this. To better understand how to reach you, how do people do that?
Go to www.morrisanimalfoundation.org and follow us. We send out a lot of great information that supports all the animals from pets all the way up to wildlife.
Tiffany Grunert, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure, such an honor. Thank you, Steve.
I have received so many correspondences about dogs being left outside and no human is there watching over the dog. And yeah, have you noticed it's kind of cold and there's been some snow? You know, now I understand and I agree and I admit Malamutes and Huskies and Newfoundlands and St. Bernards, some dogs are actually built to some extent for this weather. But I'll tell you, there have been days that are so cold and these dogs, city dogs especially, not habituated to being outdoors, that I will tell you, yes, they're built for it if it's 10 degrees, 15 degrees, but not when it's below zero and not when the wind chill is 30 below. But those dogs I just rattled off, that's not most dogs. Most dogs are all the other dogs, your typical pit bull type dog or even the Labradors and Goldens that generally love being out in the snow for a short period of time. We're talking 30 minutes or something like that. But you're out there with them and you're engaging them and they're running and jumping and having a great time. They're not just laying in the snow. No shelter, no water source, except that it might be frozen. You know what? Aside from being inexplicably inhumane to leave a dog outdoors without any choice, no opportunity to come back indoors, is ethically wrong. But moreover, it's actually against the law in this state. So speak up and do something about it. That's the right thing to do. We'll talk to you next week on Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.